the Sebastian Coes, the All Blacks, you know, the Roger Federers, the Bjorn Borgs. What is it that separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls, when it comes to being good and being outstanding and being able to do it consistently? That winning mentality. And a new book is out today. It's called The Winner's Bible. And it's been written by Dr. Kerry Spackman, who's a neuroscientist who's worked with some of the premier sportsmen and women and athletes out there. And I'm pleased to say he's on the line. Kerry, good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us today. So what is it you think that separates people who are really, really good and who can win Wimbledon or the US Open 1 year and then completely crash out in the third round the next year, can separate a Manchester United that can grind out Premiership wins year after year? OK, it's not looking like a good year this year. And Arsenal, which can sometimes flatter to deceive. What are we talking about here?
Well, there's a number of things I've observed from world champions that I've worked with. I think the first thing is that they have what I call a relentless attention to detail. And someone who I really respect a lot would be Sir Jackie Stewart. Mm-hmm. And his attention to detail, for example, was just absolutely extraordinary. I think that's the first thing. They look at all the little tiny, tiny things and they find ever finer details that they can continually improve. The second thing, of course, is that they work harder than anybody else. You take someone like Michael Schumacher. I think when he was a younger driver, he wasn't the best in the world, but continually every year he worked harder than everybody else and he just continually improved. And in fact, I looked at Wimbledon champions over the last 30 years, and if you take the Wimbledon champions at 16, these are the best, most talented youngsters. Only three men and I think only four women ever made it to senior Wimbledon. So it says that the most talented people aren't necessarily, naturally talented, aren't necessarily the ones that make it to the end. But conversely, you take someone like Martina Navratilova, who as a junior wasn't that talented, but of course she went on to have an incredibly stellar career because she worked harder and continually improved. So there's a mental toughness here that you continually improve each year. That's absolutely vital.
But there are so many people who crash out in the Wimbledon semi-finals, like Tim Henman, for example, who, I'm sure you'd agree, worked really, really hard and did the best he possibly could. Was he lacking attention to detail? Was he just not working hard enough?
Okay, there's also other aspects, because it's not just a simple thing, but those are the first prerequisites. What you've talked about is this absolute mental toughness. And now, some people are actually born with a real mental toughness. It's just part of their nature. Most people don't have that. And so the question is, how can you have this mental toughness so that regardless of what happens in the actual heat of the moment, you can be completely strong, never give in, and not lose your focus? And a game like tennis is one of the best examples of this, because you can win one particular set 6-1, and next thing you know, you're down 1-6 in the next set. It's a game where the mind is absolutely vital to performance. And for me, what's really important is that the human brain isn't just this one great big computer. That's where everyone goes wrong. We think there's just one great big program in there. And what actually happens is the human brain is made up of lots of different little modules, each with their own agenda. There's logical modules, there's emotional circuits, and they're all doing different things. And aligning these modules up is the key thing, so that when you're in the heat of the battle, you don't have different modules pulling you in different directions. I know it sounds a bit complicated, but that's just how the brain works.
We mentioned Kevin Peterson just there. It was making me wonder about how much culture plays and breeding. For instance, he can be seen to be very arrogant. And, you know, coming from South Africa, I'm wondering whether that's part of his problems. He doesn't want to listen to people. He feels superior, maybe. And do you think that plays a part?
Yes, for me, when I work with a world champion or an athlete, there's four things I look at. I call them their four pillars of their personality. First of all is their history. That's everything that they've been through. And as you say, you can be brought up in a particular culture that will give you a certain mentality. And this applies to your audience as well. Every single person who's listening to this radio has had certain things that they've been through in their life, which cast a very long shadow over how they behave. The second pillar would be your psychology, which is just the sort of thoughts that you run through your head. And of course, your history affects those. Then there's your physiology. It's your genes. It's how your brain is wired. And we're all born with different genes, and we all have different natural ways of going
about
life.
So, for example, Kerry, I, who as parents hail from Ghana in West Africa, lots of fast twitch fibres, destined, it would seem, to be a sprinter and run into oxygen debt after 400 metres.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Oh, no.
I mean, yeah, and so you've really got to take into account what's in your four pillars, your history, your psychology, your physiology, and your philosophy, which is your view on the world. Mm. You know, I may have the best mental approach in the world. I may be the most mentally disciplined, but I'm never going to beat Lennox Lewis in a boxing match, no matter how hard I try. I'm just not big enough. You know, he's 6'7", and it's just never going to work. So you've got to really be aware of your physiology, and I think this is where most self-help books go wrong. They sort of give you this idea, just believe, just think about things, and you're going to be a success. And you know, it doesn't work that way. Where I really have come from, and the important point is I never set out to write this book. It wasn't a book that I thought, oh, I've got a good idea, I want to write this. It's just people said, you've got some tools that seem to work. And I think one thing that I would say is a lot of self-help books give people false hopes. They mislead you by saying it's just about belief, and that's completely wrong.
And Kerry, can you tell us a bit more about your history? I mean, you're a neuroscientist, and I would imagine that most neuroscientists spend their time in the lab or in the lecture theatre, not hanging out with, you know, champions in Formula One or, say, working with the All Blacks or, you know, any other elite athletes.
Yes. Well, I had a very unusual upbringing. I was originally a mathematician and was lucky enough to win the senior prize in applied mathematics at Auckland University. Made some electronics, actually, many years ago and sold them to Ford Motor Company in America. And while I was there, I met Sir Jackie Stewart. And we ended up working with some professional test drivers. And the question was, why were they nowhere near as good as Jackie? We did some tests on them, and they scored effectively zero in their ability to pick up very subtle motion on cars in a double-blind test. And so Jackie scored 97%, so he's obviously massively different to them. And Ford Motor Company said, why is he so different to everybody else? And I said, look, I don't know, but let me find out. So I enrolled in a PhD, went to the RAF Farnborough, where they trained Top Gun pilots. I went to NASA, where they did astronauts, and said, let's try and work out what's special about Jackie. And that's where I got involved with neuroscience, and that started the whole thing off. And I ended up in Formula One working with drivers and various other things.
And what about some of the... No, very much so, and a completely different world, and I suppose in many ways for you, a far more rewarding world.
Yes, it's been very interesting, and what's really been surprising is that, you know, as I said, I started off in maths, then ended up doing neuroscience, and then working with, you know, these Formula One drivers, I got involved in the more mental aspects rather than the performance aspects. So originally it was about how does the brain compute motion and so on, and I got involved in the more mental aspects and realized that pretty much all the self-help books out there were useless, because if you're a champion, you're already motivated, you're already disciplined, and it wasn't working for them. And then the tools that I developed, because it's all for me about tools, not rules, the tools seem to work not only for athletes, but the average person. And, you know, so I did some work with a particular woman who had been addicted to methamphetamine for 8 years. She was a daily user of methamphetamine. The police had taken her son off her. And we did two sessions with her using some of these tools, and she never used methamphetamine ever again, got her son back, and life was changed. And so people said, look, you've got to write these tools down. And that's kind of how it got started, by accident, really.
Wow, this sounds a bit similar to the conversation we were having with Professor Mark Williams of Oxford University, who runs a Centre for Mindfulness there, and it's to do with meditation and trying to rid yourself of kind of impurities, you know, in your psychological makeup. I'm very interested in the application beyond sport, because we've been talking about, you know, Formula One, talking about tennis players, football and athletes. What about the mental toughness for example, to make a successful politician. I mean, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, under great pressure today, you know, survived a coup yesterday. You'll be aware of that because you've been in this country for a few days. And he says, you know, I'm a fighter. Tony Blair, also very stubborn. John Major, very stubborn. Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady, made of granite. I suppose, again, there's a particular personality that will manage to get to the top in politics.
Yes, for me, though, what's really important, my book is called The Winner's Bible, but for me, a winner isn't just a person who wins a gold medal or is a champion. If we take someone like Mike Tyson, he was a world champion, but he wasn't a winner, in my view. You know, he ended up in jail, and you know, that's not a winner.
Bankrupt. So,
yeah, bankrupt. He lost $500 million, I think, he earned and spent. And so for me, a winner is about someone who uncovers what is their true intrinsic drivers, what is it that makes them genuinely happy, and how do they align their brain so that they can get that. That, for me, is a winner. Now, you mentioned Gordon Brown. Maybe it is his destiny to be Prime Minister, and he needs certain tools to be tough and to withstand the rough and tumble of politics. But it may well be that some of your listeners have completely different things that will make them happy, and they need different tools to achieve that. And the biggest problem, I think, for most people is there's a real mismatch between their logical, rational mind and their emotional mind, and the two just aren't often aligned. And there's good reasons, from a sort of a primitive historical reason, why that is. And helping people to align those, I think, is really important.
Bringing it back to sport briefly, how big a part would you say the national psyche plays into all this in terms of how it impacts on any individual athlete? Obviously, in America, we know it's win, win, win.
USA,
yeah,
USA.
From the time they go to school, they're taught that. Whereas when we go to school, we're taught that the taking part is what matters. And, you know, and we love a loser in this country. We love a sporting loser historically. So I'm wondering how much you think that genuinely plays a part on British athletes.
It plays a large, it really does play a large amount, and you've only got to look at certain countries which overperform according to their population. You know, a good example, I'm from down under, New Zealand. You take a country like Australia, you know, you would say they are a relatively arrogant sporting nation, you know, that does make a big difference. If I said to, you know, let's take an athlete we all know, Michael Schumacher. If I said to Michael, you know, today we've got a new driver on the grid, and he would say to me, well, who's that? And I could say, it's God. You know, Michael would go, he'd think about it for a minute. He'd say, you know what? I think I can take him.
I can take God.
He has this sort of, and it sounds arrogant, but it's this confidence that gets you through. You know, I have a wonderful story of a woman called Loretta Harrop from Australia, who was a young athlete who wanted to get funded by the Australian Institute of Sport. She went there and they measured everything about her before they would give her funding. They measured her lungs and heart and everything, and they said to her at the end of it, look, we're the Australian Institute of Sport. We know about these things. You're not only average, you're actually below average, so we're not going to fund you. And her response was, I don't care about your silly tests. I'm going to be a champion. And she trained her butt off next year and came, you know, 50th. She trained for another 3 or 4 years and came 40th and 30th. Now, you or I would have said to ourselves, at the back of our mind, the Australian Institute of Sport has measured everything about me and said, you're never going to be a champion. I've trained my butt off for the last 5 years and I'm still coming 40th. I probably would have given up. She carried on and she ended up getting silver at Athens in the triathlon, which is a very
superb
tough discipline. So, I mean, there you go. It just shows how her mental discipline, her mental toughness, which is part of that Australian breeding, just made her rise above her genes and carry on. And the great Muhammad Ali, you know, a person who I really admire, you know, he would say sometimes he was hit so hard in the ring by these great big fellows, he would see bats sitting on the ropes playing trumpets. He was hallucinating. and this is absolutely true.
He also used to say that his kinfolk in Africa could feel it.
And he would say, that's just the territory I have to be in to win. That's tough. And I don't think you know, and I'm not knocking the British psyche, but there isn't that mental toughness. It's all a bit of a stiff upper lip, she'll be okay, old chap, and away we go. But it's not enough.
It's not enough. Kerry, thank you very much. I love talking about this stuff, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem. That's Dr. Kerry Spackman, author of The Winner's Bible and a world-famous neuroscientist, live on The Breakfast Programme.